Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
What's up? I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we've got 37 new books to talk about.
Jesus, guy!
It's fine. We don't have Justin here this week, so we're not going to get chatty about it. We're going to do a thumbs up, thumbs down. And then
just super quick,
run through this. Snap judgment.
Don't give people enough information.
How long does it honestly take them to put together these comic books? 5-10 minutes, something like that. So that's all the time they deserve.
These artists put their blood, sweat, and tears into this thing. All right,
you're absolutely right. I feel bad even saying that out loud. Why don't we jump into a big one? Web of Spider-Man number one from Marvel. Written by Zeb Wells, Cody Ziegler, Steve Fox, Stephanie Phillips, Greg Weisman, and Alex Segura. Art by John Romita Jr., Carlini, Iguara, Ed McGinnis, Eric Gapster, Greg Land, Joey Vasquez, and Salvador Larraca. This is one of those classic preview issues, giving us a sneak peek at a bunch of stuff that's coming down the pike. And this time, it's all from the world of Spider-Man. So we're getting a little look at Peter Parker, Miles Morales, Gwen Stacy, a.k.a. Ghost Spider, but we're also getting Chasm and Kane and Spider-Man 2099, a bunch of others. Lots of stuff going on here in this issue. Pete, I know you've been a bit back and forth about Spider-Man stuff. How did you feel about this?
Well, this is 55 pages of just kind of action-packed ideas, cameos. Like Justin mentioned earlier, this is kind of like a, hey, let's try a bunch of stuff, see what people like, and then maybe kind of go from there. I think this is a very ambitious and very, very kind of cool to lay out of like, hey, this is what we're thinking. You know what I mean? It's almost like we're seeing their kind of brainstorming board where they have all these kind of ideas and characters.
Well, let me ask you this. Of the stuff that you saw in this issue, because to your point, all of this is about get excited for the next year of Spider-Man storytelling. What got you excited? What of these, so most of them are 2 pages long, maybe 4 pages. What got you psyched in particular?
I mean, it was kind of hilarious because it was like, do you remember her, this Spider-Man? How about this Spider-Man? You know, and they were just kind of like, you're just kind of doing Spidey poses and stuff like that. So it was kind of funny to be like, oh, yeah, all right. Oh, I forgot about this guy. Yeah. I don't know if, because it was so quick and they were just kind of like this. It was hard to get like too kind of blown away. But I don't know. It was just kind of cool to see a bunch of different characters and kind of different things. The weird kind of gremlin goblin was kind of, I guess, most interesting to me.
We're going to probably see the least of him out of any of the characters. Maybe. I'll throw out there, I generally like this issue. I thought there's good writers on here. There's good artists.
Yeah, great artists.
The least exciting to me was the Zeb Wells, John Romita Jr. thing that kicked it off with Peter Parker. But that's only because they just delivered more. It was like reiterating what we already saw in Gang War. So I read this and I was like, yeah, I like what they were doing there. I will continue to read this. But for somebody who has no idea and didn't read Gang War, I could see how that was a good teaser. The ones that got me excited, I thought the stuff with Gwen Stacy with a spider ghost or ghost spider, excuse me, were intriguing. I'm very curious to see what's going to happen with her. The Chasm stuff, I've been very iffy about all the Ben Reilly stuff, but the idea, and this is a spoiler for the issue, that Madeline Pryor, the Goblin Queen, is like, hey, you know how we imprisoned him? That was stupid. Just let him go. Was very fun. I'm curious to see what happens with him next and what he does to Peter and the rest of the characters. I'm a little less into the Spider Society stuff, honestly, and the whole, like, Spider-Verse stuff. I feel like we've done a little too much of that. But at the same time, I was like Alex Segura's stuff, and I'm curious to see what happens next. So there you go.
He's a great writer.
Wonder Woman, number 7 from DC Comics, written by Tom King, art by Gillam March. This is the diametric opposite of the last issue, where we got a ton of stuff in the last issue. And this is very hyper-focused on one thing. It's actually jumping back before or immediately after Wonder Woman, number 5. Sorry, I'm forgetting which. Wonder Woman and Superman take a little break. We go to the biggest mall in the universe, try to get a present for Batman. Love the idea of this issue. Weird continuity on the timing of it, I would say, just in terms of like, this is an issue that comes after our big last issue, but actually before the issue after that and all of this stuff. But in terms of like digging into the character of Wonder Woman, digging into the character of Superman, putting them in fun situations, this is a really lovely, wonderful comic book that has a fun time with it. It feels mildly similar to, I'm forgetting which issue of Batman it was, but the one where Catwoman and Batman and Superman and Lois Lane go on a double date and they all switch costumes and stuff. Reminded me of that pleasantly. So I enjoyed this quite a bit. What about you, Pete?
Yeah, this almost reminded me a little bit of an X-Men issue because they go to the mall and they go shopping. And I mean, I was a little like, wow, Superman, he's hitting the dad jokes pretty hard in this.
Gotta love it. They're good. They're good dad jokes. They're
good. A little eye rolling on this. But this is also super sweet. Like the fact that the two of them are together and they're thinking about Batman and they're going to get Batman a present. I thought that was just like, I don't know. And even Superman being like, yeah, we're going to crush a coal into a diamond, right? Like I could do that, you know? So it was just, at first I was rolling my eyes, but you know, kind of like a dad situation where at first you're like, come on, dad, but then they get you in the feels. So you're like, oh man, you know? So yeah, I thought this was, a pleasant surprise. At first I was like, oh man, this is just going to be a crazy mall issue where they're going to go into Spencer's Gifts and it's going to all go down. But yeah, I'm pleasantly surprised. Great art. Get you in the feels a little bit.
Yeah, I also thought it was ultimately a very smart decision to set this in the current continuity. I was expecting it was going to go way back, but tying it into Wonder Woman having a conversation with Superman, or at least him trying to have a conversation with her about the fact that Amazons have been banned from the United States, gave it a really good emotional heft throughout the issue. So great stuff. Gillam March drawing a very poofy cape for Superman. Like, it's very poofy behind his head. Looks like a strife cape or something like that.
Oh, wow, yeah.
There you go. Man's Best, number 1 for Boob Studios, written by Portzak Pinichot, art by Jesse Lonergan. We saw an ash can of this a couple of weeks back. Now we're seeing it in color, the full issue. If I remember correctly, our big reaction from the ash can was, what? No, I want to see more. Now we've seen more of this story of a bunch of animals in space, very We Three inspired.
Animals in space. Sorry.
What'd you think, Pete? You love animals.
I do. This was awesome. I thought this was really cool. You know, it's just a bunch of furry friends teaming up to take on some evil clangers. I love this. I thought it was great art, great world building, just a solid first issue of setting things up, getting you excited for more. I thought that the talk between them was kind of cool and interesting. And yeah, I was just kind of impressed emotionally how deep it was, even though it was just animals. So yeah, fun.
Jesse Lonergan, the artist, nails exactly what you need to nail here, which is these animals are absolutely adorable. From the writing perspective, we get to see the animals talking, but the humans not hearing it. And I kind of love that as a device. I'm all in on this book. Porzak pitches shot, I mispronounced his name earlier, and probably just now, is pretty open about the fact that it's like homeward bound in space. That's exactly what it is. You got me. All, let's do it. Let's go. X-Men Forever, number one for Marvel.
Forever.
Written by Kieran Gillen, art by Luca Maresca. This is Kieran Gillen filling in the gaps between Immortal X-Men and what's currently going on in Rise of the Powers of X. And that's exactly what it feels like. I am very curious to hear what you think of this, Pete, just because as somebody who's very into what Kieran Gillen is doing on X-Men, very into this current era of X-Men, this is a little bit like, I don't know, I was trying to think how to characterize it, but it's like good homework where you're like, oh, okay, that's why that's happening. That's why Doug had a sinister diamond on his forehead. Oh, that's how Mother Righteous got there. No. Now I understand these things. So there's no real emotional story here, but it was very much, I was like, this is an essential read for me that I'm enjoying. I have to imagine you hated this.
You can't put two words together like good and homework. There's no such thing as good homework, you asshole. I hated you in school. We didn't know each other, but I would have hated you in school.
Can I tell you what I used to do in elementary school?
Can we get some more homework?
Can I tell you what? This is 100% true. In elementary school, whenever we get a new textbook, I would immediately run home, take it out of my backpack, throw it on the couch, wouldn't even go to my room. I'd be on the couch in the living room, and I'd read the entire textbook from front to back before I did anything else. Because I loved it.
Who are you?
It's true.
Oh, my God. Hey, Dad, can I go to the mailbox and read the bills? Who the fuck are you, you fucking psychopath?
Well, clearly right in my wheelhouse, this guy.
Yeah, this was not fun. I wrote down, okay, what do we learn? A lot of infighting. Sinister birthed himself out of a cocoon, and Moira had a past. Hey, Mystique was there. Great art. I have no idea what the fuck this is or what this means or
this is
what the fuck is going on.
I will say
not having fun, but I can't wait for us to get past it.
This is, I'm sure, incomprehensible for anybody who hasn't been nonstop reading X-Men comic books for the past couple of years. If you have, it is essential in terms of filling in those gaps there of things they've been skipping over, because a lot of it has been jumping around in time, particularly if you've been reading Rise of the Powers of X and Immortal X-Men and Sins of Sinister. In terms of that, I loved it. Love the Destiny Mystique stuff. That is the romance for the ages that we've got in this current era of X-Men. But I don't know. Also, I forgive you if you miss it. It's fine. Batman Superman World's Finest, number 25 from DC Comics, written by Mark Waid, art by Steve Pugh and Dan Mora. We are getting to see the first meeting between Lex Luthor and the Joker as they team up to get a mystical artifact. Love the story. Love the Steve Pugh art. Great to see him on something that's like kind of serious yet funny at the same time. He's kind of been like the funny guy paired up with Mark Russell, but this takes it a little more seriously. I thought this was a great issue. I had a blast.
Yeah, great covers. Fun kind of first story here with Joker and Lex Luthor team up, and then spoiler, surprise, surprise, the Joker is going to backstab you. And then the second story with Mixelplek and the fun cameo, again, spoilers by Bat and Mite there. Some great, amazing stuff. I thought this was a lot of fun.
I feel like, I know you just said a lot of fun. I feel like you're being a little dismissive. I will say, nobody gets the DC characters. He does the same thing with the Marvel characters, but nobody gets these characters like Mark Waid. Like, he just drills down on, like, this is your essential Lex Luthor. This is your essential Joker. Let's go from there. Like, he's just, and I'm not saying anything new, but he's just an absolute master of this stuff at this point. So it's great to read. Dawn Runner, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Ram V, art by Evan Cagle. This takes place in a world where giant monsters have invaded an area. They've been walled off. And what do we do to take down the giant monsters? Oh, you know it's giant mechs. There's a new generation giant mech, and that is coming to a monster. Some weird stuff happens here at the same time. This is not straightforward Pacific Rim. This is not just Attack on Titan or anything like that. There's more stuff going on here. I was very intrigued by this. But if you are a fan of things like that, and anime and manga in particular, I think you're going to really enjoy this issue.
Yeah, this is epic. I mean, it's awesome. It's huge giant monsters fighting giant mech robots. The art is just so awesome in creating these worlds and these monsters and mech stuff. I mean, great characters. It takes a twist at the end there that kind of pulled me out of a little bit. You know, I was having a great time with all the battles, but then I was like, did that robot get hit by that giant skull monster and then turn into a dude later in the war? So I was a little kind of like, I'll have to tune in next time to figure out what's going on. But interesting little twist towards the end there. I thought I knew what I was getting into, but then Ram V was like, nah.
I'll tell you, I mean, I think, and I mean this not dismissively at all, I think this points to the essential difference to how you interact with comics versus me. The entire time I was like, this is pretty straightforward. And then we got to the end there with that twist you're talking about. I was like, okay, here we go. Give me more of this. It feels
the opposite of how I was reading. I was like, I can get this. I love this. I understand. Hey, what happened?
Yeah. So we're getting a little bit of a blend of identities and exactly who is who. I have some theories that maybe I'll share as we continue to read this book. But as is, it starts to feel a little Matt Kinty to me at the end there in terms of like breaking the format of what we have going on.
Compliment. Matt Kent does great stuff.
100%. I really like that. I thought it was very interesting. I'm very excited to follow the series. It also has a killer title page I'd give a shout out.
Oh, yeah. Where
it feels like, I know we say this a lot, and we're a comic book podcast, but it feels like the beginning of a movie where you get this narration about everything that's going on, and then it cuts to the title, and it kicks ass. Like, it does. This is a very cool comic book, and I don't say that lightly. Definitely pick this one up. Star Wars Visions, Takashi Okazaki, number one from Marvel, by Takashi Okazaki. This is following up on one of the shorts that he did over in Star Wars Visions that took the Star Wars world and put it into the Ronin/samurai world. So we're getting a lot of that influence there. Pete, I have to imagine you love this.
Yeah, this was great. I mean, the art was the real hero here. I mean, this is just kind of fantastic art, kind of an old Ronin samurai story. The cover, I was a little disappointed because it gives away this kind of moment that's earned a little bit in the comic. But when you see the cover, you're kind of like, R2 with a hat? What? But it's a little bit more, you get the story behind it in the comic, so it doesn't feel so ridiculous. So that part was a little weird. But, I mean, just the use of, like, the blues and the colors and all the different kind of stuff to kind of set the tone, which was really cool. Also, there was this like moment when the droid turned and said Poppy. And I was just like, I don't know about that. You know what I mean? Like, that was a little weird how the droid said Poppy.
You were like a little turned on.
Like, no, like, I just,
hi, Poppy.
I just feel like that. Why is the droid all of a sudden speaking Spanish? You know, there's sound effects, there's noises that droids make, and I know it's beeping noises, but the Poppy was like at a weird moment. So I was kind of like, that's kind of crazy.
I love that this Star Wars Visions project exists both in the animation as well as Marvel Comics. Just great to see different voices and focuses on the Star Wars universe. Honestly, it's something that I've wanted for decades at this point. So it's really lovely to see it finally happening. Very happy.
Your time, Dom Nahir.
It is. And here is my time up here. Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong number 6 from DC Comics. Written by Brian Buccellato, art by Christian Duce. This is surprisingly the second to last issue of this comic book, which is taking the Monsterverse and pitting it against the DC Universe. Lots of stuff going down in this issue as the Justice League has figured out kind of where the monsters have come from. They've trapped Godzilla on the bottom of the ocean. King Kong is missing. There's a bunch of monsters that are attacking Metropolis, led by Lex Luthor, who has put his brain into Mechagodzilla. So we're really building it up to it here. My qualm with this book right now is...
Oh, how dare you!
I know it's coming in the last issue, but like I just want it to get... I want wild moments in every issue, and we're not quite getting that.
How
you think we're getting that?
Fucking dare you? Yes, we're getting that. Are you fucking serious right now? This is, not to overuse a term here, but this is epic. I mean, this is giant monsters fight each other. There's a giant Batman robot. Green Lantern creates its own kind of mech monster. Beast Boy Kong. I mean, this is just huge and amazing. And then we get this kind of teaser for the last issue. Ooh, it's going to be Superman versus Godzilla. Oh, man, I'm very excited. I love all these issues. Just the fact that we're getting kind of like real storylines is impressive because part of me just wants to have kind of like a sandbox smash fest where it's just like, who versus who? But, yeah, I'm really impressed with the storylines that we're getting in this giant epic battle. But the art is doing it so much justice. This is a ton of fun.
There's a thing that happens in the next issue that they've already put out there that I'm hesitant to mention because I don't want to ruin it for you.
Do not.
But I will mention there is a character that like dies in this issue that I was like, what are you doing? It leads directly into an event to the next issue, though, that I think, Pete, is going to make you maybe lose your mind. We'll see what happens.
I don't know, man. I don't know if I know what you're talking about, and I hope it's not what you think is going to happen.
Wait, what do you think? Do you want to throw out a prediction, and I won't say anything?
No, I don't. I don't want to.
Say it. Say it.
No,
say
I don't. It. I don't want to
say it. Say
no,
it.
No, I won't. No, I won't.
All right. Well, anyway, fun stuff. I wanted to go a little harder. Pete doesn't think it goes hard enough. Pop's Chocolate Shop of Horrors, Fresh Meat, number 1 from Archie Comics, written by Amy Chase, Ryan Cady, and Jordan Morris. Art by Federico Sabatini, Chris Panda, and Liana Kangas. We are getting a bunch of short horror stories set in the DC Universe, Archie Comics Universe. Archie Comics Universe all around Pop's Chocolate Shop as the devil comes to town. We get a couple of short stories around that. I had a delightful time reading this issue. I thought these stories were very fun, very gruesome in exactly the way that you want out of this sort of thing. And very funny at the same time. I think occasionally these anthologies have been like a little quick, like they've needed a little more space to tell their stories. But this one, I think all three teams hit it exactly right. So definitely one of the top tier horror anthology books from Archie Comics so far.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people when Riverdale ended were like, man, I really wish we got more episodes with the Goathead Devil. And what's nice about the comics is now those things can happen, you know. Mm-hmm. When the Goathead Devil shows up to your town, you know, they're going to go right to the Pops' restaurant.
When the Goathead Devil shows up to your town, going to go right to Pops.
Oh boy, fun. And yeah, I think this is just kind of madness ensuing in such a fun way of you know, kind of putting a little fun haunting into Riverdale and making things fucked up and only in ways that you know, is kind of twisted in a fun kind of horror tales type of thing, you know, Tales from the Crypt style. But yeah, I think the art was great. I think the kind of premise was clear and well executed, and it was kind of nice to see, you know, because Archie has done a lot of great horror stories, and they really do a good job of that, and good the right people on these projects. So it's impressive to see him go to work.
Star Wars Jango Fett number one from Marvel, written by Ethan Sachs, art by Luke Ross. This is a brand new title focusing on everybody's second favorite Fett character in the Star Wars universe, taking it back in time and pitting him against Aurra Sing.
Ooh. Yeah, this was a ton of fun. I also really loved the kind of title page before this started. I love the coloring and stuff on it. Set a great tone. The action, great characters, love the pace of this. I cannot wait for the next issue. I think they did just a great job of kind of like setting up Bounty Hunter. This is how it worked. This is how things are going to go. Classic. It felt like an episode of Mandalorian.
Yeah, it's fine. I think I would love Jango Fett at some point to say that's how you get ahead in this universe, because like that would be like a funny joke for the future, because he gets decapitated.
No, yeah. That was...
Did you know that?
You know what's really great about humor up? Is when you got to explain the punchline. It really helps.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, man.
Pete, for anybody who's listening, is my comedy coach, so...
I think this is a fun use of Jango. I think that also, like... I'd like to see what makes Jango Fett different, you know, like different things happening.
I think that was the thing that I was feeling through this issue, because he's doing cool Boba Fett things, but like, I don't know.
Yeah, that's how we know, you know, the Bounty Hunter world. So like, I'm hoping we start there, but then kind of get to some more unique stuff.
April special number one from DC Comics, written by John Layman, Joshua Hale-Fialkov, and Gene Luen Yang, art by Carl Mostert, Phil Hester, and Bernard Chang. This is another in the expertly titled anthology specials.
DC's killing this, dude.
Absolutely.
Just honestly killing these fun one-shot things, just like...
Whoever's naming these, I don't know if they give a Pulitzer Prize for that sort of thing, but they should.
I don't know about that. They should get something to raise
Presidential Medal of Freedom. That's what I'm thinking.
I think that's maybe a little too much. But this is just the title sets you up for fun, and if you're not looking at that going like, oh, I know what this is, I think this would be enjoyable. Yeah, don't pick it up, because this is exactly what is implied. This is just a lot of amazing, fun stories that revolve around the apes in the DC world, and monkeys and chimpanzees and all that kind of different stuff. But this is just well-executed idea. I loved all these stories. I was just having a blast. The JLA part where he was like the Jungle League of America, I loved it.
This book keeps layering on the Simeon characters one after other. Yeah. Like, oh, they got all of them. Oh no, I forgot about that one. There's that one now. And it's great. The other thing that's great about it, that it's very different from the other anthologies that DC has done, is all of the stories intertwine and continue off of each other, which I was really impressed by, given that there's different authors. So it's not just, here's a monkey, here's another monkey, here's a chimpanzee, here's a gorilla, etc. It's they start off with something and then they follow it through nicely with different tones and different stories. There's emotional heft to it at the same time as there's
funny
jokes. Yeah, they're
just not chasing their tails. There's like stuff going on. You know what I mean?
I get it. It's wild to me that you didn't say the art is bananas good, but it is.
Oh, I blew it.
You did. Turn in your gun and your badge, Pete.
That's it. Yeah, it's been a heck of a ride. I apologize to everybody, and I'm hanging it up.
Anyway, great special. Definitely pick that up. The Infernals, number 2 from Image Comics, written by Noah Gardner and Ryan Parrott, art by John G. Pearson and Lola Bonato. This is following three, not kids, they're adults now, but they are the three children of the man who is supposed to be the Antichrist. That didn't really pan out, and it's not really panning out for them either. But they're trying to consolidate power, and it's not going particularly well in this issue. We talked about the first one being like Succession goes to hell. I don't know if that's exactly what this issue is, but it's very fun. I had a really good time reading this. What about you, Pete?
This is awesome. It's, you know, there's a lot going on here. You know, I mean, you know, we got a guy dying and he's not going to pass it along to his firstborn son, which is just a slap in the face. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because you're the son, you're thinking like, oh, I got this in the bag. And he's totally. Like, nah. But I'm surprised he didn't turn around and be like, yo, you raised me, Dad. If you don't like me, like, why didn't you say something along the way? I could have gotten better. I could have grown. I could have learned. Now we're at the end.
Very real, Pete.
What?
Are you drawing on some real emotions here? As a firstborn son yourself?
No. That's weird that you would point that out. Power struggle, amazing art, really some great panels. They did a great job of showing rage through kind of very still panel work, and it's impressive. I, as someone who appreciates rage, was happy with the portrayal. A little tip of the hat to the art there. This was great.
Really good creative book that doesn't shy away from the danger, the grossness, or the humor at the same time. Definitely pick it up. Captain Marvel, number 6 from Marvel, written by Alyssa Wong, art by Rari Coleman. In this issue, Captain Marvel is trying to trap the Undone, is I believe the name of the villain character who has been plaguing her and her new superpowered thief that is tied to her with the Naga Bands. They try to pull one over on her. It doesn't go particularly well in this issue. I'm really digging this series. I really like how it's skirting along Captain Marvel continuity without making it impenetrable to new readers at the same time. Great stuff. And I really like the art as well. It's a little cartoony without going too far in that direction. Good stuff.
Yeah, I agree. The art has a cool, like, She-Ra vibe to it. This is an action-packed ish. Love the art. Love the whole kind of, like, Nega Bands thing. Like, people love their Nega Bands. You know what I mean? This continues to rock. I'm enjoying Captain Marvel right now. More of this, please.
And just as a note, if you're a fan of Hulkling and Wiccan, they play big in this issue. Yeah. So very fun as well.
Yeah,
Batman 89 Echoes, number 2 from DC Comics, written by Sam Hamm, art by Joe Quinones. 89. Batman is missing and villains are starting to build in Gotham City. That includes Madonna, who is playing Harley Quinn, as well as unidentified actor as Scarecrow. Meanwhile, the other characters are trying to figure out where Bruce Wayne is and when potentially he's coming back. I really like the series a lot, way more than I thought I would, given it's a sequel to a movie series that, I don't know, there's no reason for it to exist, but as is, particularly with Michael Keaton's Batman even off screen, I'm really intrigued by the directions they're taking all of these characters. What about you, Pete?
Yeah, I mean, first off, I feel like you're insulting Michael Keaton's Batman, which I don't appreciate. I mean, that was a epic Batman that, man, I'm overusing the word epic today.
Bad man.
Hey, fuck you, man. All right? That Michael Keaton is Batman. Continues to be Batman, and they can't let go of it so much that now we've got an echo
cycle beaten.
Oh, wow. That took way too long, man. Dude, yeah, breathe that out.
Can we rewind? Can we rewind?
Shake that out a little bit.
That doesn't even make any sense.
Great covers. Love the art. I like what's being set up, and Harley Quinn is just so much fun in this. It's a little weird where the couple of characters, like, they kind of look like Michael Keaton in different angles and stuff like that. So that was a little kind of like throwing me. But other than that, just this is a blast, and it's fun to revisit. Some might say one of the best Batmans.
One of the best. That is a bold statement. Easily one of the top 10 actors who have ever played Batman in live action.
Go fuck yourself. I didn't say that.
Yeah. Lilo and Stitch, number two from Dynamite, written by Greg Pak, art by Julia Giacomino. In this issue, Stitch is lost at a convention, comic convention, fantasy convention, whatever it is. It's a convention. He's wandering around there while Lilo and family are looking for them. This comic continues to be absolutely adorable. I think Greg Pak and company are completely nailing what the movie is like in new form. So I'm very much enjoying this. What about you, Pete?
Hell yeah, I'm enjoying the crap out of this, and I can't wait for Zelvin to book Greg Pak back on our show so we can talk about great projects like this. I was surprised how hard this hit me in the feels. You know, I mean, this is kind of heartbreaking. Stitch, kind of, you know, spoilers, but it's like, fine, I'll just live in Australia by myself so everyone I love will be safe.
Well, I was going to say, the thing that happens in this issue is that Stitch ends up at this convention and has to pretend to be a plushie doll. That happened to you, right, Pete? Like, that's something that you went through emotionally, so...
Yeah, they based what happened in E.T. off my life. It was really triggering.
And when you say that, that's eating Reese's Pieces.
Yeah, I eat so many of them, my fingers glow. Anyways, I think it's one of those things where, like, even the evil robot sharks are cute and adorable, and they want to get caricatures done of themselves and stuff like that at the con. And it's cuter and more fun loving than it has any business being, but it's just done in such a cool, fun way that also still feels like the Lilo and Stitch, you know, from the movies and Disney and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, this is just such a great job of taking a world and blowing it out.
The Invincible Iron Man, number 16 from Marvel, written by Jerry Duggan, art by Chris Lee. The end of the last
issue. It's
Duggan.
It's
Duggan. Oh, you're right. Oh, my good.
Yeah, that's...
Thank you. I appreciate it. Sorry, Jerry, for mispronouncing your name for years.
Yeah, and then sorry for running with that mispronunciation.
Yeah, the Duggs.
The Duggs.
Yeah. Can I say, he said that he was going to be writing some sort of video game something or other on the show, and I really wanted to say Duke Doug, but then I was like...
Oh, my God, dude. If you would have said that, I would have fucking lost it.
It didn't work.
Then I wouldn't have been able to, like, face him for the rest of the interview. I would have been laughing so hard at some of the dumbest... Oh, my God. Anyways.
Well, anyway... Jerry G-Dugs. In this issue, Iron Man has gotten a bunch of armor from space, courtesy of Forge and Riri Williams. It turns out it is an enormous Iron Man suit that he's using to attack all of the Sentinels who have been created by Orcus in his image. This is also done in the style of Death of Superman, so it's all full-page splashes the entire time. Big action, well-planned out throughout, very impressive issue. Over to you, Pete, for more.
God damn it, that's exactly what I have. It's action, wholly action-packed ish. I mean, this is just kind of Iron Man fighting himself as well as a giant Sentinel Buster version of himself, and crazy kind of ending, and you hope it's going to be okay. We're going to have to tune in next issue to find out, but it's not looking good for our boy. But yeah, the splash pages, the action is just everything you want out of an Iron Man comic.
Overall, I just like how Jerry is playing around with format lately. Like, that's something that he's been doing in all of his books, and it's very impressive to watch. A lot of these books end up being samey, and the fact that we're 16 issues into Invincible Iron Man and getting something that rhythmically feels a little different is great.
It's impressive.
Green Lantern War Journal number 7 from DC Comics, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, art by Montos. In this issue, John Stewart is trapped and been sent somewhere else by the Radiant Dead, the enemy that he is currently fighting. Meanwhile, back on Earth, the construct he created to help out his mom is going a little rogue. A lot of big emotions and revelations in this issue. You are nodding your head no, and also yes, Pete. What's going on?
Yeah, the Earth stuff gets you, man. But yeah, this is a great issue. Spooky start. Also, really love the ending. The kind of villain reveal was just everything you want out of a villain reveal. Very kind of monstrous in all the right ways. Yeah, this continues to be solid, but the kid with the grandma just was a bit much. There was
it's pretty upsetting, and I will say I appreciate the fact, we talked about this a couple of issues back, that it was messed up that John Stewart was like, hey, mom, who is suffering from dementia and all potentially Alzheimer's, I'm going to make a simulacrum of your dead daughter to amuse you while I'm gone. Messed up. They're dealing with that. And they're leaning into that. And I think that's a release.
That's the thing, though, is they're leaning into it. And it's like,
it's upsetting. Like, ah, yeah. Well, I think there's a world where a lesser writer than Philip Kennedy Johnson would be like, yep, I did that. Isn't that a nice thing for my mom? The end. And it's not. And he's leaning into the creepy, upsetting aspect of it and allowing the other characters to be like, this is not right. You should not be doing this.
Another way to word that is it's like he's saying, hey, you know, that fucked up decision I made kind of on the side there? Yeah, I'm going to fucking lean into that. And we're going to sit in it a little bit more so you really feel that choice I made. Yeah. So I don't know. I appreciate what you're saying, and it is very true. But I also wish it would be over soon.
Well, if you find this, I'm Already Dead, number 2 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Matt Kent, art by Dan McDade. We are following a journalist who was embedded with an army unit fighting a war between, I think, another universe and our universe. She ended up in this other universe and is now trying to survive there. It's dark. It's upsetting. Dan McDade's alien landscapes and aliens are fascinating to look at. I love this book. What about you, Pete?
Yeah. First off, wow, what a great issue. Cool world, amazing art. The ending was kind of hilarious in such a great way. I really am impressed with this. And it, you know, I don't think you've said this before, but I've said this numerous times, but like, has that Matt Kent kind of feel to it? You know what I mean? Uh-huh. Like,
got that tint of Kent.
Yeah, that's something I like to say. You don't say that at all. Dan is also killing it on art. This is very cool.
Resurrection of Magneto, number 3 from Marvel, written by Al Ewing, art by Luciano Vecchio. Storm has gone to mutant hell to bring Magneto back with her. And in this issue, it all goes down as they literally face their demons to escape from mutant hell. Pete, as you have been down on the X-Men stuff in general, but I think you like the first 2 issues of this, what did you think about issue number 3?
Well, this is intense, man. This is a crazy-ish, you know, Magneto and Storm are in this kind of hellish world of battling the Shadow King. And And then Storm kind of dies, and then Magneto summons his powers to, like, save her. But does he? And then she lives, but then but Magneto steps through this kind of portal. So it's like, are they both alive, or are they both kind of in the same place, or what's going on? I'm not sure, but, man, this is awesome. And I enjoyed it very much, and the art's crazy type bananas.
I will say, and this is no spoilers, but X-Men 97 comes out on Disney Plus today. The second episode is
today?
Yes, today, as this podcast is airing.
Oh, shoot. I was like, man, I got to run. I got an emergency that just came up.
The second episode is an amazing Storm Magneto episode. So it's wild that this comic is coming out at the same time, because there's a lot of parallels. I don't know. I think it's wild. I don't think it was that heavily coordinated. I think it's coincidence. But regardless, if you like that episode of X-Men 97, check out this issue, or vice versa. Justice Society of America number 9 from DC Comics, written by Jeff Johns, art by Mikkel Janin. Huntress, who has come from the future, is trying to redeem a bunch of villains before the time they would normally be redeemed. And by the end of the issue, we get a big reveal of a character who was teased way back in, I want to say 2021 or 2022, called the Legionnaire. Pete, what did you think about this one? And then I want to get into spoilers and talk about the end of the issue.
Okay, yeah, you should definitely do that. I'm going to politely excuse myself. I don't know, man. This had a creepy kid in it, and then the creepy Legionnaire, and the art is great.
I wish this title was coming out more frequently. I'm sure Jeff Johns has moved on to his Ghost Machine imprint, so that's part of the delay that's going on here. But I do like Mikkel Janin's art. I do like the thrust of this in terms of, hey, these villains are eventually going to be redeemed. Why don't we try to do it earlier? So I like that quite a bit. The action is very good. But spoilers here, the reveal of the Legionnaire at the end, he's this man in an iron mask, and we find out he's a time traveler with a Legion flight ring. He came back in time, and he takes off his mask. Again, spoilers here. But he reveals that he is Mordru, one of the biggest villains in the DC universe, who has fought the Justice Society, fought the Legion of Superheroes, and he says, I want your help to prevent me from ever becoming the villain you know I'm going to be. It is very similar to me to the Iron Lad is secretly Kang reveal from Young Avengers. What do you think about that, Pete? Because I've been struggling a little bit with, like, I don't know, that was 20 years ago, so maybe it's okay.
Well, I think that first off, like, dude takes off his helmet, and the mask is creepy, and then the dude's creepy underneath it. I mean, that's double creep factor right there. You know what I mean?
He's kind of a handsome dude, I thought.
I'm going to disagree with you on that one.
Okay, we have different types.
Sure, sure. But also, the classic scenario is, I know you know me as an evil person, but listen, I am coming from a different place and I am not evil. So you must trust me so that I won't then do something to completely ruin that trust and reveal myself to be evil this whole time. And I'm just like, I don't buy this at all. So
this might, the problem is it's lost all momentum because it's come out so slowly over the past couple of years. If this was something that was like every month we were reading JSA, I think this would be more exciting and interesting, but I don't know. It's a well put together comic because Jeff Johns, Mikkel Janin know what they're doing, but it's just not having the impact it should. I'm curious to revisit this in a couple of years because I love Jeff Johns' JSA run. This feels of a piece of that. It might read better once we have all 12 issues out
there. So you're saying it'll read better in the trade.
Read better in the trade. Displaced, number 2 from Boom Studios, written by Ed Prison, art by Luca Casalanguida. The first issue, we were introduced to the denizens of a small town that disappeared in a very weird way. Some of them were left. This issue, they're dealing with the ramifications of that. This title is very Lostian, is the best way of putting it. It's sort of like, I don't know if you ever saw the Netflix show, The Society. It's like a reverse situation of that, where there's a bunch of people who are trying to figure out why nobody remembers the town they were from. I'm really into this mystery. I like it a lot. What do you think, Pete?
Yeah, this is a crazy issue. You know, we have these people who no one remembers them, so they kind of like form their own group, and then they listen to some crazy old guy, but then he forgets. So I guess they're all kind of fucked, but maybe not. Also, I really appreciated the cool guy turning into a ghost at the end.
This reminds me a little bit, I had to look it up if you heard any click or clacking, the Nick Spencer, Joe Eisma series, Morning Glories, which was also like an ongoing mystery series. This reminds me of that tone-wise a little bit, even though it's a very different story. I'm really into this. I love mystery box series like this. Very intrigued by what's going on here, and there's some even weirder things that happen by the end. Cobra Commander number 3 from Image Comics / Skybound. Written by Joshua Williamson, art by Andrea Milana and Annalisa Leone. In this issue, Cobra Commander has been taken hostage by Dreadnoughts?
Yeah.
There we go. And is tortured by them. He turns the tables, as Cobra Commander is wont to do. Pete, since you love this, take us away.
Yeah, this is written by Joshua Williamson, and as you know, Justin really isn't into Joshua Williamson at all, doesn't like any of his works, but I'm a big fan, so this is nice to kind of be able to relish in this moment
here. Joshua Williamson is listening to this, this is a bit that Pete does, we all like you.
Oh, wow, man, you outed me in front of Josh. And I feel very, I can't believe you didn't consult with me before you just did that. Unbelievable. Anyway.
Yeah, and just to check, Cobra Commander, this is a title about once you move on from your job, keeping your health insurance, he's the guy who's in charge of that.
Yeah, because Cobra, we all know, does the health insurance. Yeah, he's all right, Cobra Commander. Yeah. So here's the thing. I don't know if you didn't watch G.I. Joe as a kid, if you didn't watch the movie, if you're having as much fun as I am on this, because I don't know if you know the Zelbatron, but we get a huge reveal of the Nemesis Enforcer in this issue, and I lost my fucking mind. So I was like, holy shit, it's a Nemesis Enforcer! But if you don't know who that is, you're kind of like, who's this weird guy? But, oh, man, yeah, this is just a great nostalgia kind of blast. This is just awesome. You know, it's fun the way to see Cobra Commander handle the Dreadnoughts. They're torturing him, but he is also torturing them in such a wicked kind of Cobra Commander way that I thought was great. There's a ton of action in this book. I'm just having such a blast with this. The art is fantastic. The writing is fantastic. I don't know if you have to be a G.I. Joe head to enjoy this. I am, and I'm having a blast with this. This is a great package.
So, I don't know, I want to say 15 to 20 minutes ago when you said, hey, if you haven't watched G.I. Joe, I don't know how this works for you.
I haven't been talking for 15 minutes, by the way.
I don't know, Matt, it really felt like that. I haven't watched G.I. Joe, and I have no frame of reference. And when we got to that reveal midway through the book, I was like, what's happening now? Yeah. What's going on? Who is this guy with the wings? What's happening here? The thing that is working for me about this book, though, is the horror pacing that Joshua Williamson knows so well and is putting in here along with his artistic collaborators. We get them trying to take off Cobra Commander's mask, so it ends up having this split down the middle. They draw a smiley face on it with blood. And it's a perfect setup for the end of the issue for a creepy push in on Cobra Commander's face as he watches horrible things happening off screen. That's great. That's what we got in the first issue. That's what we start to get in the end of this third issue here. I feel like we did delve, for me, a little too much into G.I. Joe land in the second issue of the first half of the third issue. But the horror is awesome. When we had Joshua Williamson on the live show, he talked about...
Oh, we should have talked about him. We should have just talked about
this. We talked to him about that's what he's going for with this title. And I think he's absolutely crushing that. So I'm having a good time there.
Do you remember during our interview, did we talk about how I'm the biggest fan of his? Or
I don't think that came up, Pete, but we can have him on again and again bring that up.
Okay.
Fantastic Four, number 18 from Marvel, written by Ryan North, art by Carlos Gomez. A bunch of stuff is going on at this issue as we find out Franklin Richards' secret. He has all of his powers, his universe-shaking powers, but only has them for one day a year in order to suppress them. Meanwhile, the Fantastic Four is trying to stop a bunch of comets from destroying a town, small town, themselves and the Earth. I absolutely adore what Ryan North is doing with this Fantastic Four run, the done-in-one stories, the big science concepts, the huge swings that are going on here. We've talked about this before, but he's really trying to channel what Stan Lee and Jack Kirby did on the original issues of Fantastic Four, and I think he is crushing it. Oh, you're wearing a Kirby shirt. I thought that was Kirby, the little pink ball that sucks up things and adopts their qualities.
That's what? No. Yeah, anyways.
Kirby, that's a name you should know.
Yeah, anyways, Fantastic Four number 18 here. Yeah, we got the godson bragging about his abilities, kind of glowing, floating above his bed. Later, you get this grown dude spying on kids sleeping. Gross. Fun action stuff, saving the world. Love that. Also, weird part where they're just talking to random cops. And then you got Mr. Fantastic with the bulging eyes. Ridiculous. Absolutely fucking ridiculous. The giant long eyeballs sticking out of his head like they're somehow binoculars because they're longer. What kind of you're supposed to be a scientist. That doesn't make any fucking sense. That's not how eyeballs work.
It actually does, though, because if you're lengthening out the optic nerves, you're changing the way that light comes into your eyes. So, I don't know. It kind of works.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess I'm the asshole then. But it looks gross.
It does look gross. I'm not going to disagree with
really you. Really fucking ridiculous. Reminded me of, oh, my God, what was that? Roger Rabbit. Yep. The Roger Rabbit.
I knew exactly what you meant.
Oh, my God. Fucking Nightwing. Let's move on to some great Nightwing number 112.
From DC Comics, written by Tom Taylor, Michael W. Conrad, art by Sammy Basri, Francesco Francavilla. In this issue, Nightwing is still having trouble jumping, but he is teaming up with Batman, a character you may be familiar with, as they track down a missing kid who has been taken by his uncle, I want to say.
Did you cry, man?
No.
You didn't cry when you read this?
I did not cry.
You're fucking dead inside, bro. You need to talk to somebody. That's
well,
fucking
talk
ridiculous.
Talk about why you cried then, Pete.
This was a very touching story about, like, Nightwing and Batman, and then Nightwing trying to help this kid in a way that Batman helped him, and it gets you in the goddamn feels, man. And you read this, and you're like, I don't fucking feel anything. So
we had 37 comics to read this week, Pete. I need to go quick.
Oh, really? Are you pointing that out to me? Dick. Yeah, give raises to everyone who works at fucking DC Comics. This book is fucking unbelievable. This is so touching, so moving, so just amazing art. You gotta fucking read this comic. I don't know what you're doing out there, what you're doing right now, but stop and go get this goddamn comic and goddamn read it.
Do you know what? There's definitely some sort of heart surgeon out there who's playing our podcast while he does heart surgery. All right. Pete told me to stop.
I'm hoping there's someone working out going, well, I got to stop. I wanted to continue my workout. But
gonna go read Night Ring, eat a garbage plate.
Hey, there you go.
My whole day has changed. Dutch, what? What did I just say? Dutch number two from Image Comics.
Dutch Duck? Dutch, look out. Duck. Dutch number two, written by Joe Casey, art by Simon Gain.
Hey, can I get the Dutch Duck? To go? It's the pieces of duck served on a windmill as you grab pieces off the windmill. Dutch number two from Image Comics, written by Joe Casey, art by Simone Gain. Is continuing the revamp of this classic 90s character who is now older, but still doing very much like Image Comics stuff. I gotta admit, I like the art in this book. It reminds me a little bit of like a Robert Kirkman book.
Yeah, like one. Brit. Remind me of Brit.
Brit, exactly what it reminds me of. But I'm bummed out because Dutch number zero set up such a clear John Wick style premise, and that's not what we're getting here at all.
Not yet.
Well, he's like going and doing like wet works,
sure,
young blood style stuff, and I don't know. I'm just not as into that as much.
Well, you might take a turn. Anyways, this is awesome. I love the action. Cover kind of spoiled the robot snake monster a little bit, but it was still such a cool fight. Dutch kind of relies a lot on his cyborg arm, you know, maybe a little too much. But this is an awesome story, awesome art. Love the main character. That line where he's like, maybe war follows me. More of this, please. This is just kind of fun, kind of like, almost kind of like a Clint Eastwood-y type character who's old.
It's Cable, basically. Like, if you like Cable, I think you'll probably like this book. Right?
Sure.
I don't know. It's a guy with a metal arm doing tech stuff.
Yeah, he's not time traveling, though.
That's true. He never says body slide for one. Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver number two from Marvel, written by Steve Orlando, art by Lorenzo Tometa. In this issue, while Scarlet Witch is dealing with some stuff of her own, specifically the Wizard and a bunch of his henchmen, Quicksilver is running around the Earth dealing with kind of the same thing from another direction, leading to a big, not too surprising cameo at the end. Continue to love the series. Steve Orlando just really gets these characters and their history really well. And Lorenzo Tometa's art is just stunning throughout. Great comic book.
100% agreed. Yeah. And Steve really gets Darcy. You know what I mean? Like, does a great job of writing Darcy.
The title character, Darcy.
I think we should change the title personally to Darcy and Friends. But yeah, I just think that, there's fun quips in here. There's a great mix of humor and action. And then kind of the reveal at the end is fun. I think this continues to be a blast. This team is just absolutely killing it.
Beneath the Trees, where nobody sees number four from IDW by Patrick Horvath. We had Patrick on the live show this past week. We talked to him about this book.
We should have talked to him.
This issue, we talked to him. We talked about the whole series, the covers, everything. Great interview. Great guy. You definitely yelled at him. Goddamn, I love this issue. I love this comic book so much. So
really?
We got a big cliffhanger at the end of the last issue where our main bear character, who is a serial killer, thinks she figured out who is the person who is killing people in her small town and drawing attention. Spoilers here, but yep, not only was she right, but we get a war of the serial killers in this issue that is, I think, the tensest book that I read this week for sure, and maybe this month. Oh my God. By the end of the issue, our main character is sweating, and I was sweating too.
Yes.
This is great. This is like one of my favorite series in a very long time. I'm so scared going into the final two issues, and I love it.
Oh, my God. Yeah, this is just what's frustrating is, like a horror movie, I found myself yelling at the comic. So our kind of main character is the main serial killer, and then turns out there's someone who's been watching and following the main serial killer, and sorry for the spoilers here that I'm doing. Then the main serial killer turns around and yells at the fucking other serial killer, like that's something you should fucking do. Are you out of your mind? They just told you you are their kind of morning star. You're their like shining light. They're like, oh, I followed you. I'm a huge fan of your work. And then you're going to yell at them. You know, they're going to turn on you. You should be like, oh yeah, play along, because they're a fucking psychopath. Just so upsetting, the decision she makes in this, and then the ramifications, and then the fact that you're working in your goddamn hardware store and one of your fucking employees finds one of your blood fucking paint jars, and then you're not going to check all the others if one's there. Hey, numbnuts, that means there's going to be more. Like, what are you fucking doing? It's not just one.
How great is it, though, that Patrick has gotten you, the reader, in a place where you're like, no,
yeah,
clearly a horrible serial killer, don't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You identify and feel for this person who should go to jail, this bear who should go to jail for the rest of her life, maybe be put to the electric chair, that you're like, oh my God, oh, don't do that. No, that's terrible. Is incredible. Like, that you could be that emotionally involved with this character who is reprehensible in a way that, like, they got away from very quickly, for example, in Dexter, the series, and made him like, I'm a heroic serial killer. That's not what she is. She's like straight up a unrepentant serial killer. Fantastic book. So good. And the art is gorgeous throughout, like absolutely beautiful. And that's what makes it work.
This comic has fucked me up so hard. I went into Home Depot. I get to the paint section. I'm looking at everybody funny. You know what I mean? I'm like, why are you working in this section, bro? Like, what is it about the paint cans that really draws you in here? Like, I am. This book has changed me. I'm so into it, but I don't want to be. But man, I'm living every goddamn page of this. And it is a hell of a ride.
More like beneath the peats where nobody eeks.
What?
I don't know. I'll work on that. Superman number 12 from DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by David Baldion and Norm Rapmund. In this issue, we are getting a finale to the attack of the Lex Luthor Revenge Squad. Back in the day, Lex Luthor was a hero. Superman knows that and is trying to turn the tide against these re-emergent villains. I will say, I feel like this wrapped up relatively quickly, despite the fact that it's been going on for 12 issues. But at the same time, it leaves a lot of room for expanding on this in the future. I think Joshua Williamson will. So far, really good run on Superman. I like the dynamic between Superman and Lex. I'm enjoying this.
Yeah, as the Josh Williamson head here, I just feel like, great kind of fun reveal of what's to come here. You know, spoilers, but the House of Brainiac, cool, great. This sounds
you love awesome. Houses.
Yeah.
They paint houses of Brainiac, don't they?
Oh boy. I think that this is kind of like a cool art style. I mean, Superman's a little bit more cartoonish in this, but it's a cool kind of look, fun for this. Any more lies, Lex? No. There's some great lines of dialogue in here. This is very cool.
Kill Your Darlings, number 7 from Image Comics. Ethan
Love S. Your Hart. Darlings.
Parker and Griffin Sheridan, art by Robert Quinn. We had the whole team on our live show a couple of weeks back and talked to them about this comic. Honestly, I don't know. I know we talked about issue number 6. I don't know if we talked about issue number 7.
Yeah.
Regardless, it's all going down here as we rocket towards the finale as our main character figures out her power, figures out what she has over this mystical world, and takes it directly to the witch who is coming for her and trying to corrupt everything that she stands for. Some big action in this issue, big emotional moments. What did you think, Pete?
Yeah, I mean, I love that. There's some great lines. Tomorrow we bring the fight to them. You know, this is just awesome stuff between the witch and these stuffed animals here. That's cute. It's gross. It has a ton of action plus magic. I'm enjoying this. The next issue should be really crazy. I think this is a blast.
This has been building really nicely as well in terms of the scale. I've been very impressed with that. Speaking of scale, Once Upon a Time at the End of the World, number 13 for Boom Studios, written by Jason Aaron, art by Nick Dragota. Mezco and... Wait, I wanted to say Mezco and Mezzi. That's not what their names are. Whatever it is, this couple that is the center of this book are old now and trekking across the wasteland, reconnecting with each other. I am so invested in their relationship, possibly more in this relationship than the relationship I personally have with my wife, to be honest with you. This is so sad, and it's headed for absolute gut-wrenching disaster, I think, by the end here. Lovely book. Love the Nick Dragota art. Jason Aaron is just digging into what the entire arc of relationships are about. Big ideas. I'm loving it.
I'm loving it. Yeah, I was flipping through the comic trying to find the names. Mother is what they call her. Anyways, this is such a amazing emotional roller coaster about relationships. In such an interesting way, you go from like not wanting them to work it out, and then this issue, a kind of twist happens where you're really pulling for them to work it out, where before you're like, they're not meant for each other, this is a wreck, I can't believe the things that they've done. But they really win you over in this issue, give you hope. This is such an amazing post-apocalyptic world that the artist has created. These two characters have been through so much together. It's there's just these small, amazing little moments, like when it's just pouring rain and one of them's like, oh, I'll find another cave. And they're like, no, you can join me here. It's just, just awesome.
The whole idea of a relationship past its endpoint, reconnecting with that person. I mean, I don't know if you've ever been in that situation. I've occasionally been in that situation, and it's just this perfectly channels that feeling there.
Yes.
Maseo and Mezzi, those are the names of the characters. Midlife, number 6 from Image Comics, written by Brian Bucciolato, art by Stefano Simeone. This is the final issue of the series, at least for now, about a character who has the power to control and repel fire. Among other things, we're getting a lot of big mythology stuff. Overall, I would say I really like this series. I thought Stefano Simeone's art was really good. The design of the main character was really good. I think it got a little complicated because I loved the family drama, which is what we ended with here in this book.
Oh, there's family drama, all right.
Which I thought was really good. The mythology was the thing I was not quite as into. That got a little complicated and dense. But all the other stuff that paid off on the promise of I'm a middle-aged superhero who suddenly has powers, what do I do with that? And how does that affect my family? I thought was very well done.
Yeah, well, what'd you think about the parents putting that kid in that, like, Sophie's Choice? Oh, my God. Like, hey, kid, who's the better storyteller, your mother or me, your father? I was just like, oh, what are you doing to this poor kid? How's he supposed to choose who's the better parent here? This is just heartbreaking to watch. I'm sure you do this to your children nightly, just kind of.
I was going to joke about it, but yes, I do. Almost constantly.
Yeah. Hello, daughter. Who's the better parent? Right now, just stop. You go.
We don't ask better parent, but definitely like who's better at this thing. And oh, they usually have a good answer.
Oh, yeah. That's fun. Mm-hmm. They make them, that's just the sweating in that moment. I was really feeling, I was just like, this is too much. Mean, poor kid. I think that this is a really great story. I really enjoyed this comic, the world that it's created in here. It continues to be good. I'm sorry to hear that it's ending.
Vengeance of the Moon Knight, number 3 from Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by Alessandro Capuccio. We have been focusing on individual characters from the Midnight Mission as they deal with the ramifications of the death and potential return of Moon Knight. Here we're getting one of the vampire characters is revealing more about what is going on with all of this. I like this issue. I like the art here.
Like the art's great.
First two issues I thought were stronger, frankly, but I'm
you didn't like the therapy break that we took in this issue where someone's just kind of talking it out with the therapist? I like
that framing device. We've had that in all three issues where we've had a therapist talking to these individual characters. I think that's very smartly done, particularly for somebody who's not 100% familiar with the members of the Midnight Mission. It's getting me up to speed on them really quickly. And
plus, if you haven't gone to therapy in a while, this is just you can just jump right back in. You know what I mean?
This is like I don't even pay for therapy at this point. I just
read comics.
Yeah. And I'm fine.
Yeah. I'd like to reiterate that.
I'm doing great.
You're doing great.
Thank you. I'm very well adjusted.
Yeah, this is weird a little bit. I mean, I love all the action. There's great fights. There's awesome art. The therapy is an interesting kind of framing device for all of this, but it is a little confusing of who's who, what's what, and what the fuck's happening. Other than that, I'm having a great time, and I do think the art is fantastic.
I do really like where this ends up. I'm very excited for the next issue of this title because there's a great cliffhanger here that leads us into, I think, getting past this framing device, so maybe you'll like that a little better, Pete. The Bloody Dozen, A Tale of the Shrouded College, number 4 from Image Comics, written by Charles Soule, art by Alberto Jimenez Albuquerque. This is about a jailbreak.
The Kirky.
Bunch, different Kirky, of a bunch of vampires who are imprisoned near the sun. We have three astronauts who are taking them back, and in this issue, they are attacked by another faction. What are you thinking, Pete?
Well, I'm thinking that this is, you know, telling some bloody tales and then listening to people hash out their shit as a giant battle breaks out. This is you got a great team on this. If the soul is there, I'm there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. If the soul is there, it's like the soul of Pixar, the movie. And that is the thing that I'm watching.
I thought you were going to say if the soul is there, it's like a solar flare.
Ooh, that's pretty good. Yeah, I should have said that. Yeah, we'll delete that part. We'll delete that part.
And the editing we do on these podcasts, it's a lot. Chef's kiss.
I like this book. This is going in directions that I 100% did not expect. I thought it would be a more over-the-plate jailbreak type thing, but they kind of got past that pretty quickly and threw in a bunch of twists and turns. This does get to a very intriguing place by the end of the issue where I'm really curious to check out issue number 5. But overall, I think this is a very fun series. The Shrouded College is an interesting universe. I'm curious to check out what happens next. Yeah. Titans number 9 from DC Comics, written by Tom Taylor, art by Lucas Meyer. One of the big cliffhangers at the end of Beast World was that Raven has been taken over by her evil demonic opposite, and she is working with her father Trigon to free him from his eternal prison and bring hell on Earth. We get some big movement here. Tell you what, this storyline is going way faster than I expected.
Yep.
And I kind of appreciate that.
Like,
I like the fact that we're not being like, ooh, Raven's evil. What's going to happen? Let's drag that out for 6 issues. It's like, nope, it's all going down. It's about to happen. Here we go.
It's all going down. Yeah, we got some cool covers, and then you got Waller teaming up with the old Trigon Devil, and then you have Peacemaker walking in on Trigon. That was a little awkward and funny.
Very funny moment with the Peacemaker. What do you think about Amanda Waller teaming up with Trigon? Because I still get, like, my spidey sense is going whenever we see Amanda Waller popping up, where I'm like, something is wrong with this. This is not just what, how do you get to a place where, like, Amanda Waller is the most powerful figure in the DC universe? She's manipulating everything. Where does that end up with her in the middle of a battlefield being like bruised and beaten, where Superman's like, well, I beat the shit out of you, Amanda Waller, and now you're done? There's got to be something else going on.
No, I think what you're missing is the fact that, Waller is smart and evil strategically, and then you put the, you know, the devil powers in there. I'm waiting for the big reveal if you see Waller with the 6 glowing eyes. You know what I mean? Like, she's like, oh yeah.
There's something. I think I want to go back. Maybe I missed something, and maybe one of our listeners could let us know. But they keep referencing something happened on Earth-3 with Amanda Waller, and I feel like something happened there that we don't know about yet, and there's some twist to come.
Yeah, I'm sure there is. But I'm excited to see what's going to happen in this comic, so I continue to enjoy this.
We'll see what happens, I guess. I don't know. I'm more interested in speculating clearly than you are. Why don't we move on with the Holy Roller, number 5 from Image Comics, written by Rick Remender, Andy Samberg. Ooh, don't stretch it out. Stretch it out.
Stop. No.
Stretch it out. Longer?
More? This is non-verbal, you asshole.
I love this. I love this. Stretch it out, says Pete.
You're too much of a fucking veteran to not know these non-audio cues, you fucking
dick. You gotta stretch it out. We need more time on this podcast. All right, so says Pete.
We got Hold on,
Joe,
right?
Troman, art by Roland Bosky. Go ahead, Pete.
Okay, thank you. Smoking, come up with a plan, playing Mario Kart. What's better than that? I mean, this this comic takes a weird Hitler turn, but up until then, I was having a great time.
Is this the first time you've seen yourself represented in a comic book? And by the way, I mean hollow Hitler, not smoking up and doing Mario Kart.
Well, fuck you, I guess, is my response to that.
This goes pretty hard in this issue. It goes in some crazy directions. Goes hard for Hitler. Not great, but I don't know. There's a lot of ultraviolence going on here. This is very goofy. This feels like very bad magazine down to the art style. Don't have a problem with it, but this is like maybe not my favorite Rick Remender book. It's very silly. I don't know.
Yeah, but Remender is kind of magical, where you think like, oh, I like this, but it's not my favorite, and then he slowly pulls you in.
We'll see. I need to get emotionally involved here, and I'm not quite there yet, but overall,
they had me at Mario Kart.
There you go. They had me at Hitler. Lotus Land, number 5 from Boom Studios, written by, that felt bad to say out loud, written by Darcy Van Poelgeest, art by Caio Felipe. We've been following this big hulking detective who's been trying to solve a mystery of a bunch of stuff. To be honest, I don't 100% know what it is, but at the same time, that's kind of the point, because a lot of what we're playing here is memory. We have his son, who may or may not be real. His mother, who may or may not be the son's mother, is reconnecting with him. Per the title, it's all about like the Lotus Eaters. It's forgetting stuff, remembering stuff. How does our memory play tricks on ourselves? A lot of it is probably going to come out of the last issue, but I really like the art in this book, and I like the writing. Even though I'm not 100% sure what's going on, I think that's kind of the point, and I'm very intrigued.
Agree, 100%. Yeah, very interesting comic. You know, we get some bird watching going on here. Kid talking about his hands a lot, you know, in this post-apocalyptic world. But yeah, the writing and the art's intriguing enough that I'm going to keep checking it out.
And last but not least, Something Epic, number 8 from Image Comics by Simon Kondransky. This is a continuation of the series. Very surprised to see it, but about a bunch of folks called Epics who can channel imagination and characters into the real world and create stories. Here we're following a mystery where, spoiler, but Sherlock Holmes gets murdered.
What?
And an epic gets recruited by not Howard the Duck to solve
it. It's Howard the Duck.
It is Howard the Duck, but they don't call him Howard the Duck.
It's Howard the fucking Duck.
Talks
like Howard the Duck. It's Howard the fucking Duck, man.
Really like Simon Kondratsky's art. It's very detailed. It's very specific. Very good. Even when he has packed dialogue panels, the art still really sings throughout, which is very impressive and hard to do. I wasn't sure about continuing this series because it already felt like it went past the point where it needed to in the first arc, but I was very into this kickoff. I think this is a really nice extension of this concept. I was very impressed. We're getting a different main character than the first 7 issues here. I like this quite a bit. What about you, Pete?
Yeah, there's a lot going on. I'm not sure I'm abreast of everything that's happening, but yeah, you know, the Howard the Duck stuff is fun, and the art's epic, and just like the title, and I got to stop saying the word epic, but yeah, I think we did a great job in the stack.
If you'd like to support the show, which we did an amazing job with, and all the shows we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, boy, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m.
Justin, Facebook, we miss you, buddy.
No, this show would have been 3 times as long if Justin was here. Facebook and YouTube to come hang out and talk about comic books at Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Yeah.